It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. And it's my great pleasure to have on the phone Saz Hollander. Welcome, Saz.
Hey, everybody. Good to be here.
And in the studio at the moment, Mark Kelsey. Welcome, Mark.
Happy Gray Friday.
And I'm going to start by, let's turn to you, Saz. You've been following what it appears to some people to have been an increased activity on what is often referred to as the crime beat. What's your sense of things?
I don't know if it's increased activity, but it's certainly the continued activity. And there were just a couple fairly significant stories that came up this week. Most recently, there was, I think, the last court hearing in the first trial, murder trial, in the Grunwald case. That's David Grunwald, 16-year-old, who was murdered in November 2016. And the first of the four suspects directly charged in his killing, that trial jury selection starts on Monday, and it's supposed to take all week because the case was so well known that there is a concern that it will be difficult to seat jurors who could be, you know, fair and impartial. The district attorney, Roman Kalachak, sounded fairly confident, as did Heath, the judge, that it will be possible. That, yes, everybody has heard about the case, but that doesn't mean they can't be fair. And the defense attorney, the court-appointed attorney, John Iacone, I always butcher his name, is being very careful. I asked him for just some very fact-based information at the end of the hearing yesterday. He said, I won't even answer those questions. I don't want to bias the jury. So it's a sensitive topic for sure. But this will be a high-profile trial. It's expected to take about a month, at least the month of May, and it's in Palmer Superior Court. And so that was, back in 2016 is where that all started. But it taps into the kind of current concerns about crime because of the, at least, allegations that this was a group of teenagers, some of whom knew David Grunwald, and operated kind of just below the level of most of our radar. Most, if not all of them, were at some points, quote-unquote, homeless, couch surfing, living in trap houses, where there was drug activity going on, or at least allegations of drug activity. There was a murder at the house where they were. Some of them were staying in the summer before Grunwald's murder. That's certainly, I think, exposed an undercurrent that is obviously of great concern to parents and public safety-minded people. There's also been a new... unfortunately, child sex abuse case revealed a guy named Seth Loggins, who's 27, from Wasilla, and at one point drove a first student school bus about 3 years ago, so from 2012 to 2014, is accused of molesting at least 8 young victim boys and girls who are 14 and under 14. And I have covered a lot of court hearings in my years as a veteran reporter, and this was probably the most emotional and kind of grueling, just because there are a lot of victims in this case. The judge and the prosecutor both said that they'd never seen anything like this. And because there may be more victims from his time as a bus driver or other occasions, the extent of his case is kind of setting up to be one of the worst in the state, perhaps. And he was in court early in the week. But the case is setting up to be a really difficult one because all these families involved, found out these kind of horrific details of what he is accused of doing to their kids, and most of them knew him one way or the other. This wasn't kind of random. He didn't grab them at a bus stop or anything like that. And so to sit there, in these kind of packed court gallery benches with, mothers who were, crying and reaching for tissues, and fathers who, weren't letting themselves show they were crying, but were crying and trying to cover their faces, and just the level of anger and frustration and grief at, these young kids whose innocence has been stolen allegedly by this guy, is pretty horrible. So There may be follow-ups on this in terms of his time with first students. So that's kind of hanging fire right now.
And Mark? How did he ultimately get caught? How long had this been going on?
Well, the current
allegedly.
Court case dates back a year, although I haven't seen the indictments, so that those may date back further. His initial four victims dated back a year, and one of them told a parent, and it kind of went from there. But he had threatened his victims, prosecutors say, with guns, knives, tasering, so he threatened them to be quiet about it.
So the reason why I brought up the question initially about an increase in what appears to be a number of occurrences is that perhaps it's not so much that, but a confluence of some high-profile cases involving situations that have gone on for a while. I'm thinking in particular also about the state case involving an Alaska trooper who has been incarcerated and charged because of a follow-up attempt to establish a relationship with a young woman who he had stopped for a traffic stop, I believe. And the reason why this has hit particularly hard is because some years before, back in, I think, 2014, there had been a complaint lodged with the troopers about an incident involving a training person and the trooper, and it seemed to have never gone very far, except now that it has surfaced as a background piece saying, well, we had some indications here. Whatever happened to that investigation? Zaz, have you followed that at all, or Mark?
Yeah, I've followed it. Other reporters in Anchorage have been able to go to the hearings in that federal civil case. So, but from what we've been able to glean, that there were some kind of actions taken after that complaint was filed, but we aren't allowed to know what, because that is confidential, which is, I think, pretty frustrating. I know it's frustrating to us, but I think it's frustrating to the public as well. Because there, I think there is a certain amount of transparency that's needed here to show that the Department of Public Safety holds troopers accountable when they engage in inappropriate conduct.
Absolutely. That's a public employee, and I agree that there should be a higher level of transparency. I'm curious, quick backtrack to the Grunwald case. Is the outcome of this trial a factor in how the others involved will be tried,
oh, yeah.
or are they completely
yeah.
independent?
Well, I mean, each of them will be independent trials, but I would imagine that if it's a decision against Eric Allmendinger, who's the first defendant who's going up for trial, and is sort of seen as kind of the linchpin of them because it was his confession, and under a long interrogation, I think it was 6 hours at the Troopers Post in Palmer, that really laid out at least what he says are the details of what happened. And from what some of the others have said in different court documents I've seen, his basic description of what happened, I think it kind of jives with what they say. You know, where they disagree is on who actually did, who fired the fatal shot, who engaged in the beating in the trailer behind the Allmendinger home in Palmer. And so, yeah, if Allmendinger is convicted, then I would think that would fuel some pretty good plea changes.
So is he being charged with first-degree murder?
Yeah, first and second-degree murder and kidnapping.
And what are the charges against the other four?
I can't talk right now.
Similar for three, and then one is not charged in the murder. One is charged in evidence tampering, and that's Devin Peterson, and he's going to be sentenced in August.
And are the others all charged currently with first-degree murder?
Yeah. So they all have Dominic Johnson would be the next trial. I think September is when that's tentatively slated.
Interesting.
So this feeds into some discussion that occurred at the Borough Assembly meeting this past Tuesday. At that meeting, there were two contingents of people, a somewhat larger contingent from Willowa subdivision and smaller from the Butte area. Those listeners who are aware of the discussion around Willowa as a subdivision that is just outside the city of Wasilla in the borough know that there's been reoccurring concerns expressed about that area and what appears to be a fairly large drug trade going on, a change in the atmosphere in the subdivision, some expressions of fear, not letting your kids walk around, and attempts made to contact someone to assist in the process of providing some regulation. The group that has come from Willowa has done so consistently, saying we want to work with the borough, work with whomever would be helpful in this regard. What was interesting is that the people from the Butte had somewhat similar story, asking for help from the borough, both in terms of code compliance as well as looking for ways to have an increased police presence. The discussion that went on and at the table there with assembly members was to say that they were involved, they had visited the place, etc. As they were looking toward the future, the difficulty was finding a way to provide assistance for police protection. There were obviously suggestions that the state could increase the number of troopers. There have been discussions about how the city of Wasilla or the city of Palmer might extend a contract into that area as a police area that would be paid for by the residents of that particular area. But what was interesting when all this was said is that there was still the problem of the greater question about the criminal justice system. In other words, providing a police presence that would perhaps apprehend people would put people into a system which appears to be overloaded and locked down in a way that it's hard to get things done, or where you have circumstances where it seems to take a long time for anyone to actually come to a trial, etc. So the concerns that have been expressed are about specific areas, but I think they're generalizing into concerns from people in the borough, not so much in any of the cities. Zaz, have you followed any of that?
Yeah, and I have to say that this is not the answer, and I'm sure it's not considered the solution, but there have been, I've noticed an increase in the troopers' dispatches of troopers patrolling in the Willowa subdivision, you know, arrested so-and-so and so-and-so. There have been maybe a half dozen of those press releases come out in the last month or so. I think they are certainly responding to these complaints from people in the Willowa subdivision. But they're also probably trying to point that out as much as they can. It's in their interest to do that. I think, Mike, that you're basically, if I understand correctly, you're saying that, you know, what's happening in Willowa kind of mirrors what's happening in other places, certainly in Mattsu outside the cities, and also gets to this way much larger debate about or conversation about our criminal justice system. And, you know, even if we get 25 new troopers in Mattsu to go out and arrest people, in part because of the new sentencing guidelines and in part because of SB 91 and in part just because of the way the system works, especially if there aren't any new prosecutors hired and public defenders hired, then what happens next, you know, is a question. And either, yeah, they get shoved into an overcrowded prison system that doesn't seem to be fixing people given the high recidivism rate, or they're back out on the street and back on whatever substance may be causing their issues, or back into whatever patterns they were entrenched in before that happened. So there's certainly no easy answer, and it sounds like there are a few different options and hopefully some new vision for how to handle that here in the borough.
Well, one of the things that emerged was that there are some assembly people, and I would suspect we could point to two, and those areas that have appeared with representation, including Mr. Sykes and Mr. Leonard. Taking the stand, Mr. Sykes in particular, that the assembly needs to begin the conversation, not beyond the conversation, but the looking at various proposals and cost factors involved in taking an action. There was some pushback against that, saying basically this was a problem, wanted to look at it, but I wasn't picking up from the assembly as a whole a willingness to plunge into this with a very focused approach. Maybe I read that a little bit wrong, but I think as time goes on, I think Mr. Sykes will prevail, and you'll see a detailed look at the options rather than right now what appears to be something of a piecemealed approach, basically saying this is such a complex problem, how do we even begin?
Mm-hmm. Well, and one of the issues is the fact that as a second-class borough, Mat-Su doesn't have law enforcement authority, and so that kind of overlays progress on, you know, even if the borough would want to get involved in some kind of a sheriff's department, the legal authority isn't there. There was talk of a kind of instead of a road service or a fire service area, a police service area, but who would staff that, et cetera? There are a lot of questions.
Yep. Well, let's swing to another meeting that happened also on Tuesday. It was a busy time. Over at the City Hall in Palmer, there was a special meeting, which actually was a regular meeting. The normal regular meeting would have been on the 8th of May, but because that happens to be Palmer High School's graduation night, the council moved that regular meeting activity to the previous Tuesday, which happened to be May 1st. There were two items that came up there. The one which has been around for a while deals with plastic bags. And I was over at the assembly, so I had to do a quick run-up afterwards and speaking to a council member. But it appears by reviewing the agenda and the unofficial minutes, if you will, that the plastic bag ban has been introduced. And if a person is particularly interested, they can go to the City of Palmer's website, and the agenda and supporting documents located there. There was a very long list of people that had expressed an opinion in favor of a plastic bag ban in the City of Palmer. These were people who were business people and others from the Palmer City and its surrounding. I think that at the moment, the way this will work is that at the next regular City of Palmer Council meeting, the discussion will be taken up, in this case with a public hearing on the topic, and then the council has the opportunity to either vote for the ban, which seemed to be very similar to one that exists in Wasilla. Mark, you had a question?
Yeah, who's speaking out against it?
I, in my quick look, didn't see anybody. I mean, on record, there is no one that has come out. I know in the discussions that have occurred at previous council meetings, there have been people who raised concerns about whether this should be done by an action of the council or whether it should be done by a vote of the people and whether it should be imposed upon and all of the businesses in the city and whether smaller businesses would be hurt. These were questions raised, but I saw nothing in the record that stood out as a strong, no, we shouldn't do this.
Do you think that translates to easy passage or are there still hurdles?
Based upon the reading of what was there, I would say this is on its way to passage, and it'll be very, very interesting to see if anyone comes out to speak at the public hearing against the ban. But at the moment, I would say it feels very, very much as if the majority of people that are interested here, and they're not, they are people with business interests, not just citizens without any money in the game here.
Have Cars or Fred Meyer weighed in?
I did not see anything from them, and of course they have already essentially agreed to what's going to happen in Wasilla. So right. They've been down the road. Well, the second item, though, in some respects, is the most interesting one. And when you ask, will this pass at the next meeting, there are only six left standing because one member of the Palmer City Council resigned, Mr. Brad Hansen. And he resigned to take the position with the city as Director of Economic Development. Now, that appeared, and as best I understand, it appeared as a result of an advertisement for permanent placement of someone in the position. There's been an interim since Sandra Garley left that position and retired. And there were, as I understood, 9 candidates. Mr. Hansen was selected as the best of the candidates. And there was only one little thing that had to happen, and that was that the rule that sits there that says you have to have a year between the time that you serve on the council and you can be employed by the city of Palmer had to be set aside or waived in this case. As I understand it, I wasn't there, but in speaking to people and looking at the record, the vote was 6-0, Mr. Hansen, of course, not being able to vote on this, in favor of waiving the rule, and he immediately resigned and has taken the position of Director of Economic Development and is moving on with that.
Well, good for him. I would say as far as getting somebody who knows Palmer and loves Palmer, you know, I'd guess it, the city would be hard-pressed to find a better person than Brad Hansen. He, of course, has been here, I think his whole life. He graduated from Palmer High.
Long time.
Been involved forever.
18 years on the council. Although that's right. The two things that I've heard expressed is still the question of waiving a rule such as this. There's good reason, and we know that it happens at the national level, state level, and even local levels, that there can develop what is referred to as a revolving door that allows people to be in public office and then go to work for the entity and back and forth. And in general, there's been concerns raised about doing that. So that's one thing. And the other question raised is Mr. Hansen has a knowledge of Palmer. The real question is this is a director's position where you're a manager of a number of departments, the library, planning, et cetera. And he may well be able to do that. We have not been privy at this point to qualifications, comparisons, et cetera. We know Mr. Hansen very well because he has served so long and well on the council. So I would suspect time will tell. Zaz, any comment?
No, it'll be interesting to see who his replacement is.
Were any of the other eight candidates from the area?
Well, I believe that the person sitting in the interim position, David Meneses, who is the building inspector, was one of those candidates, but I don't know about the other 7. So, and I also don't know about the process used, who was involved in the selection beyond the city manager, et cetera. Some of those things will probably come out again, but I would say it's probably a good thing to say we wish Mr. Hansen well in this and the city well in having a person in that position who is not an interim but has the full backing because it does cover a lot of very important aspects of the city's life. And it will also be interesting to see whether this means that there will be a intensification or continuation or a change in the direction of the philosophy of economic development. Mr. Hansen has been involved in developing that as a council member, so we'll see how it plays out. Okay. Well, the last little thing we can mention, because it's not so little actually for many people, is down there in Juneau, there seems to be glaciers are receding, but the glacial progress of the legislature is not to be denied. There apparently is an agreement on a percentage draw, but not the more, some people would say, important aspect, which is how much goes where, how much goes to dividend, how much goes to budget. Mark?
Important and certainly more complicated in a political sense. The plan currently on the table would cover about 80% of the existing deficit, and with the blanks to be filled in as we go, particularly about the sticky issue of the size of dividends in the future. And that, you know, folks who are in favor of doing something are quick to point out that it's a baby step, but at least it's progress. It's something. It gets us a little bit closer. And it seems to be the thing that that the legislators who have got to be, you know, hungry to get back to the home districts for campaigning and fundraising, they all seem to think this is a workable solution for this year at least.
Okay. Well, folks, once again, we've come to the end of another edition of Valley Edition. I really want to thank Zaz Hollander for taking time to call in today. Thank you, Zaz.
Anytime, and enjoy your great weekend, everybody, and the weeks to come.
Thank you. And I also want to thank Mark Kelsey for coming into the studio on this gray day and sharing as well. Thank
Always
you, Mark.
Good to be here.
All right. We'll be back next week for another edition of Valley Edition.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.